Hey, Witcher fans, welcome to Whiskey with Witcher. We are here with another side quest for you. And this one's kind of a special one because it is not just me and Valerie and producer Sean in the virtual studio this time. We have a special guest. With us this time, we have the wonderful artist, writer, creator extraordinaire, Joanna Estep. She's also a big Witcher fan, which is, it's not how I know her, but I think it's how Valerie has gotten to know her and certainly how she knows the podcast. So say hello, Joe.
Hello, Joe. No, I'm already off to a bad start. I'm already badly behaved.
No, I mean badly behaved.
Badly behaved. Best start.
Yeah, that's kind of what we go for here. So yeah, and so we are, since we have a guest, and Joe does not live in Los Angeles like Valerie and I do. Joe, where are you?
I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. We are currently covered in snow, like by a lot. I was outside shoveling earlier, so.
Oh, wow. Like we're, I think it was like in the low 70s today or something like that. Maybe the high 60s. Maybe it might have been, you know, might not have quite have gotten to the 70s.
That's an asshole move, Tim.
Oh, but, you know, that's what Californians do when, you know, because everyone else gives a shit about all of our high rent and crazy laws and stuff like that. But it's like, but we got the nice weather.
Yeah, you got the nice weather. It was high 20s for me today. Oh, so.
Wow.
Not fun.
Yeah, do you miss that? Miss former Ohio, Valor?
Not at all.
I was born in Ohio. I'm from there originally. So.
Oh, what part?
Dayton.
Oh, okay, cool. I grew up outside of Cleveland.
All right, cool. I've been to Cleveland like once, maybe.
That's enough. I was there for Christmas, and there was that big storm with like the crazy winds, the really low temperatures, and there were inside icicles inside my parents' house. We had icicles on the windows.
Shit. So you're saying we were both in Ohio for Christmas and we could have met up but didn't?
Well, we could have, except for the crazy storm.
Yeah. I was about to say, I was actually really deeply snowed in, and I did try to meet up with another person, and that was just, no, it was a lost cause from the very beginning.
I had the same. Yeah, I had a friend who was like, yeah, I'm not coming, and I'm like, that's fair.
Yeah, it's like, I would have worried if you two tried to meet up and like end up, you know, going missing and frozen. It's like I'd lose two friends.
I don't want to worry Tim. That'd just be the worst.
Okay, Tim, we're not idiots. We know how to deal with snow.
I'd probably drive in the snow better than all y'all. So
oh no, for sure. No, for sure. Like Valerie seen me drive in snow and it was not pretty.
When we went to Ireland, Tim was the first one to drive, and we got off the plane, so it's like, okay, A, you're sleep deprived, B, it's snowing, and C, it's on the opposite side of the road. Have fun.
Yeah.
Good times. Good luck, Tim. Try not to kill us.
Yeah. Fortunately, I did not kill anyone, but no hurry to do that again. And I have no doubt you are a much, much, much better driver in snow than I am. Valerie, I'm sure, is too.
You know what else she's much better at than us? Being an amazing freaking artist.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shucks. No,
so let's let's talk about why we have Joe as our guest. Well, one, she's a big Witcher fan just in general, but also, Joe is, along with like actually working professionally, on occasion, she does do a lot of fan art, including a lot of Witcher fan art. So we will go into that quite a bit. But also, you recently published a Witcher mini comic. I actually don't have it, but Valerie does. So, you know, this is more one where, you know, I expect you to kind of take the lead on that. But what's it called?
Oh, you asking me or you asking Joe?
Yeah, who are you asking?
I mean, either. I guess, Joe, it's you're the one who wrote and drew it. So what is it
What's it about? What is it about? It's called Where Are You This Moment? And it's basically just, you know, me being, I'm a huge fan of Geralt and Jaskier as a couple. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that's the thing I choose to hyperfixate on. Yeah. And, of course, I want to, you know, I cannot help myself, but you know, I need to write epic romance all the time. That's just kind of how I'm wired. And because, and I would say the average bear writes fan fiction, which, you know, thank God for that. I've read so many of it. Many of them. I'm gonna, but I tend to think in pictures, like I write in pictures. So I just, you know, they just start appearing in my head and then I start, you know, sketching them down. And then suddenly I'm like, well, shit, I've got a whole comic. So, okay, I guess we're drawing this.
Huh. All right.
But I didn't even really get into what it was about, except it was, you know, about their romance. But that's kind of just the basis of what you need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how many pages is it?
That's a good question. I mean, it's somewhere between 20 and 30.
Oh, so that's a pretty decent mm-hmm. length for a mini comic.
Yeah, and there's two short stories in there. One of them is like, you know, very emotional and kind of like artistic, kind of a play on like what is time to someone who lives as long as a Witcher does. Yeah. And exploring what that means. And the second one, and that's the one where I hurt everybody's feelings because it's very emotional. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry about that. And the second one was just like, okay, well, I'm going to make it better now. And I'm going to do a little spicy part. So I was just like, yeah, if you're not over 18, don't buy this comic because it gets spicy in the second half.
See, now, okay, that's interesting because I don't think I've read the second half. I don't own the mini comic. I probably should get a copy of it.
It's because I am better than Tim is.
I own plenty of other of Joanna's comics.
I was about to say, Tim probably has enough of my bibliography.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll bust those out. I have them here with me. But sticking on this one, yeah, I don't own it yet. You did post, I think probably the first story, I think on your Twitter at one point, because I remember reading it just digitally. So I think you posted
the art there. I posted the entirety of the first one, and I think I teased the second one, but the second one is not, I didn't really make that super public.
Yeah.
Not safe for work.
Yeah.
No, it's not safe for work.
I don't think I even knew about this second one. I didn't know there was
surprise.
A naughty little one.
Surprise. And it's like, the reason that my mom is like, can I have a copy? And I'm like, no, mother, no. And she's like, but I'm a cool mom. And I'm like, no, sorry.
My mother knows this podcast exists. And she's like, what's it called? And I'm like, I'm not telling you.
Oh, really? Your mom doesn't even know the name of it?
I think she does now. But I'm like, don't listen.
Meanwhile, my dad not only listens, but is recommending whiskeys.
Hi, Tim's dad.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, let's broadcast our drinking to our parents. That's a great idea.
Speaking of, before we get any further, what is everyone drinking? I realize we forgot to ask that at the start, which is what we normally do. Valerie, why don't you start?
I cracked open the Provenance, the scotch that we had from an earlier episode. Yeah. So that's what I've got.
Oh, okay. That's good. That makes sense. I also am drinking a past sample. I was a little tired. We got some work being done in the apartment right beneath mine. So they woke me up early this morning and I've just been kind of just out of it all day. So I busted out the Jameson cold brew. Yeah. Cause I'm like, I want it. I almost made a cup of coffee and I'm like, oh, but we're about to record. So I'm like, oh wait, I still have half a bottle of that stuff. So I tried finding some Baileys to put in it, but we're out of Baileys. We don't have any. So I'm just drinking it on ice this time.
Fie, Tim.
So that is me. I have a potential backup in just a bottle of Jim Beam down here if I get tired of the coffee stuff. And Joe, what about you? I saw you just pour something.
Yes. I don't have any whiskey. And I also knew that if I went whiskey shopping, I would get really pretentious about it. And I was just
I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, like I know. It's because, like, you know, my brother, I was telling Valerie, I refer to him as being in bourbon fandom. And I was like, if I get something really like whatever, he'll judge me. I can feel my brother's eyes judging me if I get any like stupid cheap shit. So I was just like, no, I think I'm just going to stick with red wine. So I'm drinking just a red Zinfandel today that I got at Trader Joe's. It's quite tasty.
Oh, wow.
Mine still fits the alliteration, so I approve.
Oh, it does. And like, I also need listeners to know that I spilled it everywhere right before this. And while everyone else was troubleshooting sound recording, I was cleaning up a massive wine spill. So that's where I'm at mentally.
Well, Jeff, if it makes you feel any better, I was out with a friend the other night and I completely spilled like at a fancy restaurant twice. So,
oh, that's really? So charming.
It happens
of you.
To all of us.
Love
oh,
that.
Wait, twice?
I love that.
Twice?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Was once this was a glass of water and yeah. then once oh, was okay. There was like sauce, like that au jus sauce, and I just was cutting violently and off it went.
Oh my wow. God. That reminds me of one time that I fell down in the middle of a cafe, not once.
Oh no.
But twice. And you know, everybody's staring at me looking like I'm like dying, like they're ready to call 911, hands on like their phones. Like, is she okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm just clumsy.
Yeah. It's always fun when you wipe out in public.
I was like, oh, I just beefed nope, it twice okay. in a row. They think I'm having a stroke or something.
Well, I was just going to say, we're talking about Joe's comic. Joe, if people want to get this comic, where can they go?
They can go to my store, Envy. Let me make sure I've got the exact link
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, and we'll throw it up on social as well so people yeah. can find it.
Yeah, social and maybe included in the episode description. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, it is just my name, joannaeastup.storeenvy.com. And that's cool. where I've got about 20 left. Mm-hmm. 20 comics left. That's all.
Yeah.
Because they sell actually really well at conventions.
Yeah, so, yeah.
When I do like a self-published mini, I usually print about 100 and then just sell them till they're gone.
Yeah. Now, how often do you do? Like, obviously, this is the first sort of Witcher mini you've done. I do actually have some minis from you back here, which I'll grab in just a moment.
Oh, I'm like scared of how old what you must.
how often do you do mini comics?
I would say about every other year or so, because that's usually whenever I get a new hyperfixation. And then I'm like, oh shit, I can't stop drawing this. Might as well do a comic because it's all I can think about. So yeah. I just, you know, I usually find a new fandom or something to hyperfixate on every couple years. And that's when I kind of just lose my mind and draw a whole comic about it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I want to get into that. But before we do, let's ask like just the obvious question that I'm sure you get asked by everyone who talks to you, which is like, how did you get into drawing? Like when did you start drawing? Like what point in your life? And what would you say was kind of the biggest inspiration for you to start?
This is funny. This is actually very similar to a talk I've given a couple times to like literary clubs and such in Madison, because I go and talk about and educate people about sequential art. If we all go all the way back, it's I really loved dinosaurs as a child. Mm. And I was like, I did the whole I'm going to be a paleontologist thing. But then I realized what I really liked the most about dinosaurs was drawing them. So I was like, I'm going to be an artist. But, you know, that's such a nebulous concept mm-hmm. to kind of begin with. So it wasn't really until middle school and high school or I was really into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at the time. Mm. And because I'd grown up watching the show after school every day and was really obsessed with the cartoon and was always drawing the turtles. And then one day, somebody, I think my father probably brought home this comic that was Ninja Turtles. And I was like, wait, what? This is a comic? I can read this? And then it sort of like blew my mind because I was like, oh, I don't have to become an animator to make stories. I don't need this whole thing that feels out of reach to, you know, like a middle school kid. I can do this by myself. I can do a whole story on my own and draw it and do everything and have ultimate creative control.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it's really clicked to me that I can do stuff like that. And, you know, ever since then, it was just a lot of different reading more comics, meeting more people who are into comics, just refining my art, just a lot of trial and error. I would just draw them in like study hall on computer paper and Sharpie, you know, just whatever I had. And I don't know, eventually started taking my portfolio to conventions and showing it to people until, you know, I had a comic that I was showing around that I'd had, you know, published in a very small like zine anthology. And somebody, you know, Mark Wheatley, actually his name, he grabbed me and goes, hey, do you want a job? And I go, maybe? And then he introduced me to writer Alan Gross, and we ended up doing a 3-volume series for Tokyo Pop called Road Song. That was my first comics job.
Yeah. I'm for people who are not watching us, who is everyone except for the three people on this conversation, I just held up the book. So yeah, I have.
He
I
sure
have
did. Song. I'm like, yep, he's bound to have those.
That's how I met Joanna. Now, like a couple quick questions before we get into that, because I do want to get into that. Did you go to art school, or were you just like entirely self-taught and basically gain your art skills just by doing it?
Well, you know, it's a little of both. I feel like yes, I went to art school, but like what I did in art school is I was just like, I could take tons and tons of like figure drawing classes or, you know, painting or printmaking or etching or whatever. But like, what is going to teach me how to think and illustrate sequentially? Nothing. I did not go to a school that taught me that. So what I did was because every single advisor I ever had was just like, it is not likely that you are going to become a comic artist and make money at that. I was just like, okay, well, I need a plan B. So what I did was I chose to major in graphic design.
Hey.
Which is, hey, which is, because I figured, okay, I can teach myself to draw comic books because, I mean, I'm like already doing it. I'm interested enough. I'm just going to keep practicing. And with graphic design, I'll be able to teach myself some skills that I could apply to my comic book problem. And so that's just sort of what I went to school for. So technically I did go to art school, but not to really become an illustrator or gotcha. A comic book artist. I went to school to become a graphic designer. And so I've got all those skills, and I found that intensely helpful, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, like I know a lot of people, obviously a lot of artists who I've worked with and who I know went to art school, but not all of them have. So it's kind of like a little bit here, a little bit there.
I always advise, I guess, beginning artists or who are asking me, like, oh, how do you make this your job? And I always want to say to them, I'm like, get into marketing. I'm mm-hmm. like, you can teach yourself to draw. If you're interested enough and you keep doing it, you will get good and you will learn. But like, yeah. teach, like, go to school for the thing that you don't care about, that you won't get an education in any other way. Like, teachers, you know, and especially if you're an artist, there's a good chance you may be self-employed and you need to know how to market yourself. And I feel like I am totally full of crap saying this. Because I hate marketing myself. I am just a cave troll when it comes to that sort of thing. Publishers will be like, oh, help us promote this thing. And I'm like, oh, God. I drew it, I guess. Post.
Yeah.
So I'm like, do I wish I'd gone to school for marketing? Yes. I'm terrible at it. And yeah. I don't like doing it.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, I wanted to ask you just one question about like Road Song, and actually a comment about it too, because, you know, like this was a while ago and I have not looked at this book for probably a few years, and I'm flipping through it.
Maybe
now.
You shouldn't. Maybe you should just put it down and walk away.
Absolutely not, because this is what I'm going to say. The flaws in Road Song are not you. The flaws in Road Song are not the art. The art, I'm looking at this and I'm like, I don't know how old, and I'm not going to ask you how old you were when you did this, but I'm guessing you were in your early 20s.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And this is, as someone who edited a lot of original graphic novels for Tokyo Pop, you know, kind of during this, and guys, anyone listening who doesn't know who Tokyo Pop is, Tokyo Pop is a manga publisher. Their heyday was kind of the early 2000s, I would say. And maybe, you know, yeah, I think the very early 2000s, they were one of the two big manga publishers at the time. And then they kind of imploded. They're still out there, but they're not the same company that they were. They're certainly not doing original Well, maybe they are now, but I don't know. I don't know what they're doing these days, but they're not.
I like, actually met somebody who works for Tokyopop kind of recently. They are
I know they brought back the Rising Stars of Manga competition.
Oh God, okay. I won't touch that with a 40-foot pole.
Well, you never entered that, right? Did you?
No, I absolutely did.
Yeah. Oh, you
and
did?
Did you win?
Were you one of?
Got nowhere.
Oh, okay.
I was not even a finalist.
You got published and published 3 volumes by Tokyo Pop. You did more than most of the people who won that contest.
I did not place in the contest at all, but I circumvented that and just, was able to, there's different ways of getting work. So
yeah. Well, as someone who judged that contest and who edited original graphic novels and who looked at and read plenty of them that I didn't edit, I'm looking at this book right now, Joe, and this is like really strong art for someone in their early 20s. Like, this is one of the better looking books I think I have from Tokyopop from that era that wasn't drawn in Japan. Like, this is really impressive. So you may be kind of hard on it. And I don't know what the experience was like working on it, but like the art itself is really strong, even I think by my current eyes. And
thank you.
And then like the other thing that I think is remarkable about this, and this is what I want to ask you, is this. I know how I don't know if I'd say you have a specific style, but I know how your art tends to look. It does not look like it does in this book. This is not your typical art style. So you were drawing, I'm imagining, out of the style you were comfortable with. And that is interesting to me. Like, how was that? Like, is that something you like doing, trying different styles? Or how was that experience drawing something that looks a lot cleaner and more manga influenced than what I usually see from you?
It was interesting. I will say that I love to experiment with styles, and a lot of times every time I do a new mini, I kind of almost use it as an opportunity to try a different style and see how it fits. And I feel like I'm only just, coming into who I really am as an artist. Like, I'm only now just figuring it out. At the time, I was super resentful because I was like really into sort of like indie comics and like sort of like the Western comics scene. But I was offered a job doing manga, and I was very, familiar with manga, but that's just not how I drew. And Lillian Diaz Prisbol, who was editing me at the time instead of Tim, helped and kind of like coach me into a style that would fit the Tokyopop sort of standard. And I definitely had times when I was really mad about it. I was like, I don't want to draw like that. I want to draw like me. And so I had to get to a point where I was drawing manga, but I was also drawing me.
Yeah.
Or, and that was, yes, I was resentful, but I did get there, and I felt like it was a good exercise in the end. And actually, because I'm always, and every time I finished a book, I would use it as I want to try this specific style now. So I would refine something or change something or switch materials or switch tools. And I feel like, so if you would look at volume 1 versus volume 2 versus volume 3, they're all a little bit different because I was doing something a little bit different with each one.
I just have to compare them. Yeah.
Never really wanted to, I guess, do that in the middle of a book because I was more interested in the consistency. But, there was all sorts of things that I want to try. And I feel like now, a lot of times if I use sort of like my different fandom excursions to that sort of thing where I was just like, okay, I did a lot of like this kind of thing in this fandom, and now I want to try drawing this way for this fandom. And so I feel like following my art has got to be confusing because I'm such a chameleon sometimes. But, I like to try everything. I don't want to get bored. And yeah. I worry that my brand is weak because I don't necessarily have, one style that's super recognizable. But I also think that that's a strength, that I could function in so many different styles.
I feel like a lot of that comes from your graphic design background, too, because part of graphic design is that you have to be a bit of a chameleon and do, you have your own style, but then you also have to marry that to what the client wants. So in a way, I feel like you're, you know, you're experimenting and you're doing different things and being that chameleon. And, you know, each comic is almost a different brand in a way that you're working with.
Oh, this is true. Because every story has its own personality in a way. And and I, a lot of times, have something different that I want to bring to each thing. And I tend to compulsively write and draw romance. That's just what I do. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to say the things that I want to say and express what I want to express. And a lot of times when I'm drawing for like a fandom I'm really passionate about, like Witcher, it's how I meet people. I trick them into being my friends because I just start drawing and I throw it into the void. I'm just screaming into the void with my art, being like, look, I'm here. I'm making stuff. Come talk to me about what I make and what I like, because I'm trying to get. Yeah, so it's about communication for me. And I always want to get across what I feel about the piece of media or the story that I've written or that I'm enjoying, that I'm passionate about. And I want to connect with other people. And I do that by just hurling art at the internet a lot of times.
Well, I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you first and foremost about Witcher and like what brought you to Witcher. What was the thing that got you into it?
Oh my goodness. Okay, this is an interesting story because like I was watching it ever since it came out. And, you know, but I was like, I was enjoying it like a totally normal amount. You know? where I was just like, oh yeah, watching this thing with my family, it's really good. And then season 2 came out and I was kind of like, holy shit, wow, Yaskier, that's a hell of a breakup song that you just wrote. I'm really feeling that. And my housemate, also my platonic life mate, Amber, I can't not mention her because she was the one who did this to me. She's like, what if we took the character of Yaskier and put him in like one of our stories that we write back and forth, like we RP together. If you guys know what that is.
It's okay, Joe. I make lots of fandom references and Tim's like, what?
Okay. No, this.
Yeah. This one I kind of like, know though.
Yeah. RPing is, it's like that's shorthand for role playing. And the way I do it with my best friend is that we each kind of like inhabit a character. Like, if we were RPing Witcher, I write Geralt and she writes Yaskier. And we just, you know, I will write a post and then she will react to that in character, you know, back to mine. And then it's just sort of a back and forth. You write a story together. Except because it's all improv, kind of spur of the moment, it's very exciting because you don't know what the other person is, how is going to react or what they're going to say. So it's kind of like writing an improv story. It's like D&D without the dice in some ways. but like I was awesome. Just saying, I was like, Amber, no, we can't do that. I'll get attached. And then it was just sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy after that. Because then I was just like, oh no, I'm attached. And then it was, oh no, I'm really attached. And it was just like, oh no, I'm drawing a whole comic about it. And getting into like the lore, and God, I want to play the game so bad. I have not played the game yet.
It's fun.
How have you not played the game? Yeah,
because I've been too busy drawing.
Okay, that's good. Like, it will suck up all your time if you.
It will suck up all your time because a lot of times I will finish like my work or whatever I've done for the day. I like a lot of times for my daily bread. I letter manga now.
Yeah.
I also still like draw comics from time to time and I sell my art at conventions and whatnot, but I would say the daily grind is lettering.
Yeah. I had a question for you, looking back kind of more at your career, and then we'll just get full on into fandom and Witcher stuff. But like but it's related to that. It kind of, I think, bridges to that is like, obviously you've done a lot of fan art for Witcher and other you know, properties. You've done, you know, in some cases, fan comics. You're talking about all this like really interesting sort of ways of expressing your fandom. But you've also done actual, you know, licensed, like official, quote unquote, official work, you know, in various franchises. I know you've done work for Marvel. You drew X-Men. You drew Fantastic Four. You've, you know, you worked with me on Fraggle Rock. You did Thrilling Adventure Hour. You know, me knowing you, like, I can't imagine you would draw a franchise you just flat out don't like. You know, that just doesn't feel like how I know. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but how I've always read your career, you're willing to say no to projects. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I feel like you have to at least be somewhat of a fan of the material to agree to, like, you know, do put that sort of work out there. So with that in mind, do you approach these things different? Obviously, you have less interference and input from people like editors and licensors and stuff when you're just drawing a straight fan comic. But does it come, like, you know, do you kind of approach it the same way, or is it totally different in your mind? Like, how does that mentally kind of square?
Well, here's where I'm about to grossly contradict you.
And I mean, say go ahead, because maybe I'm wrong about things, but like...
And say that it is actually very difficult for me to work on franchise stuff. Like, some easier than others, because I grew up loving, and I mean loving, X-Men. Like, if I could go back and tell my, like, middle school self, you are going to get to draw a comic about Rogue and Mystique. And, like, Rogue was, like, my favorite. I loved her.
Mine was Gambit.
So oh, no. Well, I shipped them. I shipped them so much. Yeah. I was, like, so I was all, I drew, middle school me, barely knowing what, you know, sex was always drawing pictures of, like, Gambit and Rogue kissing in their underwear. You know? I'm being like, oh, my God, so scandalous. So that one, like, doing the Marvel stuff is probably the easiest for me, because I definitely did have an emotional tie to, like, Marvel comics. Fraggle Rock was probably, that was fun for me, because I do love Henson products and properties, but, like, Fraggle Rock hilariously was probably the one I was least familiar with, and I only got to become familiar with it as I, you know, worked on it and got to know the characters and the fans. The fans are great. I love the fans.
The fans are really cool.
The Fraggle Rock fans are just amazing. But by and large, my journey through all these, you know, getting publisher bingo, I call it, you know, working with all these different publishers and comics, as it taught me that I don't super love working under an iron fist of creative control or of a style book that says you have to draw a certain way. And I, you know, largely do find that kind of restrictive and frustrating in a lot of ways. And so I call myself, like, semi-retired from comics, because I'm not doing it full time anymore. But, you know, if somebody, like, calls me up and says, like, when Marvel was just like, hey, can you do a quick, like, short story for our Pride issue with these characters from New Mutants? I was like, God, absolutely, because that's, you know, it's not a very long commitment. But if they showed up being like, hey, do you want to draw, like, this entire, like, Fantastic Four series graphic novel, whatever, I would be like, I don't know about that, because that's a big commitment for me. And, like, this was after I drew a limited series for Dark Horse, and the time it took and the deadlines I was under, I had almost no time off, and I was sleeping badly. I was just mainlining energy drinks. My health just tanked. Like, it just absolutely tanked trying to keep up with that schedule. And after I finished that, I was like, you know, maybe I'm just not going to do this full time anymore, because like, I felt so sick all the time that I was just like, technically I'm doing the thing that, like, I always wanted to do. Like, this is my dream, but I don't feel successful. I feel like shit. So I have to figure out, you know, a way to sort of get around that. And so I kind of was like, I got really burnt out, and I stopped drawing comics for a while. And it was only through, like, fandom stuff that I got myself interested in drawing them again, because I'm like, okay, this is on my terms, and I get to draw whatever I want. Nobody can tell me, oh, this character can, you know, has to be XYZ. I don't have an agent being like, oh, we're not going to publish this sort of book because we don't like the fact that your character is an adult male instead of a young female. And I was just like, I don't want to just write young females. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of times, like, people don't give women artists, like, what they want. They give them kind of they're like, oh, here's a part for a woman, here you go. And I'm like, well, I don't always necessarily feel like writing as a woman. And it gets very fuzzy, but a lot of times the creative control that has to be exerted, especially if you're working for a franchise that has to adhere to specific things, I'm not always super comfortable with. I want more freedom, or like, oh, God, forgive me. I have a hard time working with other writers. I just I want to write my own stuff. And I'm not saying that the perfect writer for me is not out there, but I am going to say I haven't really met them.
Yeah.
So the perfect creative relationship for me isn't really one that I have found yet, because I'm probably just that much of a little bit too much of a control freak. And like I said, it's a little bit different when I was like drawing X-Men and New Mutants and stuff, and something that I was like, oh, I was super passionate about. And but like even Road Song, I was like, I was like warned up front. You're like, okay, you're not really going to like, don't get attached to this. You're not going to own this property or anything. You're only going to half own it, which, you know, is, you know, code for you can say you own it, but you can't do anything because the other person holding the other half won't let you. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right. But like, I didn't really run the risk of getting too attached anyway, because I wasn't the writer. I mean, I helped create those characters, and I'm proud of that. But, you know, they were never completely mine, and so I was, like, never really, like, ready to sell my soul to any of that. But I'm getting off on a tangent now, probably.
Well, something you were saying earlier, too, like, with the franchise stuff, I've got to think there's a lot of physical limitations to being an artist. Just, like, you can only draw for so long before your body's like, no, I need a break. And sometimes it's got to be really tough to churn and burn all that with those deadlines.
Yeah, and I've found that churn and burn does not actually work great for me. Right. I mean, that's what I was doing. Really. I would sit my ass down at the desk and just draw for X amount of hours. But I found out that as an artist, what is way more functional for me is to not be just glued to my desk all the time, but really to go to my desk when I'm feeling like my peak productive hours, and not force myself to be there all the time just grinding, but to, you know, have time away and then to come back when I'm feeling like functional, like when I'm really feeling on. Because the difference there is, you know, I will do, if I'm on, I'll do like, you know, a certain amount of work in like 3 hours. And if I'm not on, if I'm really just kind of forcing it, it'll take me 8 hours. Like it'll take me all day. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I have to like be like, okay, strike when the iron is hot. And I've kind of got like a schedule that I kind of function on based around that. But it can be difficult to find that balance. And when you're under like deadline pressure where you have to get it done X amount of time, which I will say the Marvel deadlines are like that. Like I basically do end up glued to my seat for like 2 weeks at a time or whatever it takes to draw however long the story I've got. And in short bursts, yes, that's fine. I can tell my housemates, can somebody pick up some dinner for me because I can't leave my desk. Yeah. It's not sustainable for me for like a long period of time. I really respect artists who can just churn out like monthly books, especially if they're penciling and inking. I'm always just like, you're like God tier to me. Like, I don't know how you do it, because I can't. I've been there. And I mean, also, I'm not as young as I used to be. Was I doing that with Road Song? Absolutely.
But yeah, I was going to say, you must have been. You got the 3 volumes out. Like that, like for people who don't know, and I'm assuming most people listening don't, is remarkable, because that's never happened. Like, you know, the goal was always, oh, we greenlight this and it was going to be, you know, 3-volume series. But like each volume had to be individually greenlit. And most artists, writers, creators did not get past the first volume. If they were lucky, they got a volume 2 and were told, wrap up this 3-volume story you had mapped out in 2 volumes. You know, that was very common. There were a handful who got the 3 books. But not a, the majority did not, and you did. So you must have been churning and burning and getting it out quickly enough for them to.
I am proud of my three books. I was like, oh, I got the three out. But I will say, while I am good at grinding, it is not something that is healthy for me, and it is not something I enjoy.
And you were, like you said, you were a lot younger. Mm-hmm. Mallory and I talk a lot about this, just like, you know, like, yeah, when you get older, certain things
change. Oh, no, I love to refer to myself as though I'm 1,000 years old. But
But I, you know, I'm with you. Like I, on the writing side, you know, like I, like for the day job, I have to do a lot of writing, but like I work with and know many other professional freelance writers who do kind of are in this sort of, web entertainment, you know, comics, journalism sort of space that like, you know, they just churn out a bunch of articles every day, 5 days a week, sometimes more than that, more than 5 days a week. And just keep going. And I can't do that. So it's like what you're saying about, you know, how you just can't keep going, you know, constantly just churning out this art, you know, it's, yeah, I'm like, I can't relate as an artist, but I can relate as another sort of creative professional that it's just like,
because it's similar. It's, you know, you're using your, you know, creative, it's like creative building, problem solving. And that's just not something that is sustainable that much for a lot of people. And like I said, I can do the grind, but it's not healthy for me. And so I try not to.
Yeah. But, you know, talking about stuff though, that's maybe not more grind. Let's get like kind of back to kind of fandom and stuff like that. Now, like Witcher, we talked about your mini comic, but you know, you've drawn a lot of fan art as well. And I guess, you know, like one question I had is like, are a lot of your is a lot of your fan base now just Witcher fans? Like it feels like your Twitter account is mostly Witcher art and Witcher, you know, kind of sometimes a little bit spicy and stuff like that. But it's just like it really feels like that's the bulk of what you're posting. And have been for maybe the past year. I don't know. I don't know how long it's gone back, but like, it feels like it's been a while to me. And so, yeah, like, you know, and then I know you've gone to, you go to cons. I don't know if you went to New York Comic Con. You went to one, a big one like near the end of last year. And it's just like,
I do Dragon Con most every year. I do Dragon Con every year. They have me as a guest and been every year that I've applied so far. So
yeah, I need to get to Dragon Con.
Never done here. Dragon Con.
Oh, yeah. Dragon's so fun. I would love to like hang out with you guys at Dragon.
We should go some year, Valor, because I've always wanted to go.
Is that the one that has all the amazing cosplayers?
Yes.
Is that Dragon Con? Okay. Yeah.
There's a lot of amazing cosplayers. There's a lot of partying. Like, oh my God.
I like that too.
I know. Oh my God. I wanted to go when I was still in my 20s, when I was working at Tokyo Pop. That was always my goal because I'd heard that too. I'm like, yeah.
It's a huge party con. It kind of is comparable with like San Diego a little bit like that, where you just feel like you're at Mardi Gras. You're like, holy crap, this is nerd Mardi Gras. But But because I'm selling at those, I have a table. A lot of times I'm like, you know, I'm working the whole time. And, you know, my other like industry friends will be like, hey, we're going to the rave at 2 a.m. And I'm like, oh, God, you guys have to work.
I don't know how I feel about a nerd rave, guys.
Oh, my God. No.
Those nerds, the Dragon Con nerds,
they go hard.
Party, though. Yeah,
they go hard. Yeah.
My indulgence this past year was I did not go to the rave, but I went to the burlesque show, which started at midnight and ended at 2. But so I went to that and I was like, yes, because I was all about nerd burlesque. Was there
someone in a stormtrooper helmet doing burlesque?
No, there was Alien Queen, though.
Oh, there you go.
Xenomorph Queen. So I was like super happy about it. There was so much good. And I also, because I pay an assistant to help me table, I was able to be like, God, will you go open early while I sleep in 2 more hours, please?
Yeah, I like how you think, Joe.
I swear I'll be there by noon type thing, but you know.
You're paying them.
So I don't do cons alone. I always have an assistant. So otherwise it's just miserable.
You're a wise person. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Dragon Con. But like, okay, so you go to Dragon Con, you've gone to other cons, I'm sure. I know, I don't know if you exhibited, but I know I hung out with you at Comic-Con like at least once.
I never had a table at Comic-Con. The only times I went to Comic-Con was when, you know, I'm promoting something, I'm doing signings. And when I'm not doing that stuff, I'm, you know, schmoozing with industry people like Tim.
So, Joe, we talked a little bit about how you got into Witcher. I want to know, like, what do you love about The Witcher? What are your favorite things? Like, what attracts you to the franchise? What makes you make all of this amazing fan art? Like, what's the bee in your bonnet that got you, obsessed?
It's the characters, really. I really vibe with the characters, like, a whole lot. My first favorite was, like, Gaskier, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he introduced in season one, his pants are full of bread, he's singing about abortions, and I'm like, oh my god, I love him, I would die for him. Okay, maybe I didn't feel that quite as passionately at the time, but I was still just like, who is this? You know, and I feel like that's when the series really picked up for me. And I'm not gonna remember the name of the episode, but season one with the Striga.
Oh yeah!
Oh, that episode is so powerful.
It's Betrayer Moon, I believe, is that.
The juxtaposition of, like, you know, Geralt fighting the Striga, which is, you know, this sort of abandoned daughter sort of woman, you know, and juxtaposed with, you know, Yennefer essentially undergoing her transformation and, you know, getting her uterus ripped out in real time while she was awake. I was like, this is so very much about women's pain. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I found that really powerful and resonant. And I don't know, I just really love the characters. And
I've talked about this on the podcast a little bit, but I think it's to the benefit of having a female showrunner and some female writers that you get that perspective. Because for me, it's not something that I saw in fantasy growing up. I didn't see a female perspective. Like, women were, you know, the love interest or the mother or whatever, and that was it. Like, you never got to be that fully actualized character. So to have those relationships and to have those characters, like Yennefer, who's, like, kind of a horrible person a lot of the time, and
no,
I love
that's
it.
Why I like her.
Yeah,
though. I love.
Yeah, exactly.
I love a messy bitch.
Women don't get to be messy bitches on screen. We're supposed to be like these pristine Madonna horror kind of things, and it's
no.
Just
I'm like
to see
my, you know, my favorite is when women come on screen and like act like complete assholes. I love that, and I don't mean like just. And I don't mean like assholes in a way that makes them attractive to men. I mean like just jerks, just being people, just being ugly, you know, just having their feelings and without, you know, the constant hovering over of a feeling of like, okay, this woman character has to be attractive or she's out of here. And I won't say that like Witcher is always exactly great about that sort of thing. But I do say that, like, sometimes I like Yennefer's uglier moments. Mm-hmm. And people will be like, oh, she's so mean. And I'm like, that's why
she's
I like
so
her.
Unlikable. Yeah.
That's why I like her. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Like, what do you want? I want everything. You know, I just, I relate to her. I
participated in so many, you know, complicated conversations about Yennefer. Because she's a very polarizing character, but I really like her quite a bit.
That's a great way to describe it, Joe. Complicated conversations about Yennefer, because it's like my feelings about Yennefer are complicated, you know, because of just like I could say, you know, and this is applicable to when you play The Witcher game, like, I'm not a fan. I feel like I'm very much in the minority here, but I'm not a fan of romancing Yennefer, because I feel like I would not want to be in a relationship with someone like Yennefer at all. Like, I just
and I feel
not,
that's fair.
You know,
I don't. But, when I eventually play the game, I'm not sure if I'm going to romance anybody or if I'm just going to be, you know, swinging single.
You can do that too. Like, that's a cool thing about it. But like, that's just me. You know. But that said, I do like her as a character, and like, I especially like, you know, the Netflix Witcher's version of her and Anya Chalutra's performance, and just like a lot of sort of the kind of You kind of understand things. Now, I had criticisms for season one in particular with all the baby stuff. Valerie knows mm-hmm. that very, very well. But
oh yeah, that's the brunt of most of criticisms that I hear is they're like, nobody likes the baby stuff.
Yeah, but season two, I thought like really her character got a lot more interesting to me and there's a lot I like about her, a lot I like about her in the books as well, but she is a complicated character. And I feel like you can have such wonderful, complicated conversations about her if you really want to, you know, just really just digging in and just kind of, you know, like trying to unpack some of that and what, you know, you like, what you don't like, but what you can understand, even if you don't like it. And she's just such a complex character.
I mean, some very dear friends who I cannot really have these conversations with because a lot of times they just go, nope, I don't like it when women are reduced to being obsessed with babies. I want to be more than just a uterus. That turned me off instantly. And I'm like, you're valid. But, you know, I am going to talk about my messy bitch with like my other friends who do like hers.
Yeah. And I think Valerie's point that she's always made, which is she thinks the pregnancy thing is kind of hurt by the nonlinear timeline in season one because
it absolutely is.
Yeah,
because it's I feel like the nonlinear timeline for people who aren't expecting it is very jarring. Like I remember talking to my father when me and my brother were watching Witcher together, which is what we did for like two Christmases in a row. And he was like, I tried watching that. I don't understand it at all. Maybe it's just not for you, Dad.
See, and I love the nonlinear timeline. There are things that do get hurt because you're like just dropped into these random moments in the character's lives. So you don't get to see the growth in the characterization sometimes. Mm-hmm. And like with Yennefer, it's like, I get where they're trying to go with her. And I get that it's not necessarily about babies so much as it is about choice. But with the limited amount of time that they have to portray that, I don't think they quite stick the landing.
It kind of reminds me of like, this is a bit of a tangent, but like Yennefer suddenly being like, I can't have this thing, therefore I want it more.
Yeah,
it makes me one of my struggles is I'm a bit diabetic, and as soon as I was diagnosed and found that out, I was just like, I was not even that really into sweets. I didn't care that much. But as soon as you tell me I can't have it, I'm like, I want cake. I want so much cake.
No, I get it. Yeah, I think that's something we can all kind of relate to for sure. You know, I wanted to ask you something else, Witcher related, Joe, just, you know, because like, I'd imagine there might be people listening who will look up your stuff along with, the mini comic you've created and the fan art, and you have some great prints available in your print shop that are Witcher related, especially if you're, Garrus Gear sort of shipper, but like you also have like an original Witcher character that you've created. Can you talk about him a little
bit?
What's his name and what's his story? Because he's unique character.
I'm gonna do it. Can I mispronounce it? I'm gonna mispronounce it. Holst.
It's Holst of Belhaven.
Okay.
I finally gave him like a hometown, except it's not really his hometown. He just hangs out there.
Nice.
Valerie drink.
He's kind of like, he's pulling a Geralt a little bit. He's like, I wasn't born there, but I vibe with this place. So.
Yeah. How did this guy come into being and what's his,
his origin story. Well, something I loved about Witcher fandom, but I never felt like I could really participate in, is like the way people like make original Witcher characters. Like they're like, I want to make my own Witcher. And like, cause there's all these different Witcher schools and there's, you know, all the different rules and all the techniques and all the different, you know, so I was really excited about that. And I was watching other people in the fandom make these characters. And I was just like, well, that's so cool. There's like a whole other kind of like sub community of people making like Witcher original characters. And I was just like, that's probably never going to be me because I have a hard time making original characters that I care about in sort of a fandom sort of way. A lot of times if I'm making an original character, it's very clinical there to serve a specific purpose in a specific story and, you know, to be this thing, and there it's not something that really involves a whole lot of involves care, but it doesn't involve a whole lot of love. on my part. So I was just like, I don't know how to invent a little guy that I love the way that all these other people are inventing little guys that they love.
Little guy.
particularly the LGBTQ community, like, loves, I've noticed, making, like, Witcher OCs. I know so many transgender Witcher characters now that my friends have made. And people just, they're like, just hand wave whatever, like, screw canon, we want to make this, we want to play in this world. And I was like, I would really like to be able to do that. I just don't know how I'm gonna get there mentally. And this is so silly, but God, you're gonna laugh, but the thing that inspired me was actually, like, I'm a huge horror fan, and
gonna laugh at that. You'll get no laughs there.
Don't laugh at that part. Yeah. You can laugh at the inspiration for my little dude. Because of all things, I went to go see Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness in theaters. And I was just like, man, why is, like, there's like a whole scene where he's like an undead zombie thing. And I was like, why is undead zombie with half his face falling off Doctor Strange so hot to me? I hate him. And I was like, I want to make a guy like that. And I was like, I will make the gnarliest Witcher character I possibly can. Not because I don't expect to fall in love with him, but maybe because I just want to draw a really gnarly dude with, like, half his face falling off. That sounded like fun to me. And it was. It was like a big anatomy lesson where I would just, you know, download a picture of a skull and then try to draw or, like, drape a face on top of it and then just, like, leave parts out. And so I did that and I was like, you know, projected a little bit. I'm like, oh, look at my little character. Look how ugly he is. He's horrible. He will never find love. He's forever alone. And I projecting, it's me being like, okay, well, I mean, I'm trying to find peace with the fact that I may well be, you know, single for my entire life because I suck at dating. I just really do. And also I'm set in my way. So it's just like, what if I made this horrifically ugly little man who, you know, no chance of, like, romance in his life or whatever, that I could kind of project onto. And he could be, like, totally zen about it. So just this utterly mutilated little Witcher. And I say little, but then I was like, if you look at his stats, he's like 6'6".
He looks like he'd be a frightening dude, actually, you know.
Little is a state of mind.
No, that's the whole idea, whereas, like, everyone's so terrified to approach him. He's like, you know, half his face is gone. He's got a hook for a hand. He looks like a ghoul. You know, that was the intent is, you know, because I looked at zombie Doctor Strange and was just like, I've never found Benedict Cumberbatch more hot than this. What's wrong with me?
Okay, side tangent. We'll come back to this. But Joe, Witcher's on potions. Am I right?
Edit stuff out, right, if you need to?
Of course, yes.
Okay, because I have a friend who is just begging me all the time. She's like, please draw me, like, on potions Witcher cock, like, just black veins. And I'm like, I haven't done that yet, but it would be really pretty.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of want to see that. I kind of want to see Joe.
We should keep this in and just bleep out what you said and let people figure it out on
their
own.
We don't bleep anything out. Come on.
Oh, I think it'd be funny.
We earn our mature rating.
To clarify, I can edit it out. That doesn't mean I'm going to.
No requirements. I just wanted to make sure that you had the option if you wanted before I started talking about potion cocks.
But this is the sort of stuff we're not going to.
This is what you come to us for. Yeah. You go to those other podcasts for, like, lore and shit.
Yeah, we talk about potion cocks.
Yeah, this is why I don't want my mom listening to the podcast.
I do not know many Witcher fans who are not completely horny for that sort of thing. They're like, you have a fanfic where, like, they do the do on the potions? Give me that.
See, all right. There are different types of Witcher fans. You guys gotta realize that, right?
Like, it's like that meme. There are two types of people.
I'm talking about the ones I know, like, Tim. I guess technically I know you.
I love Witcher, and, you know, and I'm not LGBTQ. I'm not really into guys, but I can still appreciate good looking guys. But yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to picture a female Witcher if Ciri was all potioned out. I don't think I'd she'd be.
Oh, it's that's a good,
not
a good.
That's not a good because she's underage. I'm thinking of game Ciri, you know, like
more of
a
Witcher.
Yeah, I will also say that, like, me being essentially a lesbian, which I'm kind of, I'm slowly like changing my identity from bisexual to lesbian, because that's just sort of how I feel. But it does not mean that you're not necessarily attracted to guys.
Yeah.
And also, because I think women's bodies are so imposed upon and commodified that a lot of times it's easier for me to project onto something that is very much not me. So that's one of the reasons I love to write male characters, is because I feel a lot more comfortable that way. And being attracted to like male, like boys or male actors or like boy characters does not mean that I want to date them. You know, I remember Rosie O'Donnell talking about Tom Cruise. She's like, I never said I wanted to like be with him. I just want to be around him. Like, he can come over and like, I don't know, hang pictures on the walls of my house.
Yeah.
In terms of male characters, I always related way more to the male characters because the male characters were the ones that were written better. Like, again, the women in fantasy, like, sucked. So, of course, I was always more into the male characters because they're the ones that had the backstories and got to go on adventures, you know?
Yeah, were there any girl Ninja Turtles? No, not for me.
No, there was, like, April who got kidnapped all the damn time.
But she wasn't a Ninja Turtle, was she? No.
And there was one girl that was, like, a lizard in an episode or two, but other than that, nope.
Did she know Kung Fu though?
Like, I don't remember. It was a long time ago. Yeah, she was just in a few episodes. I had the action figure because back in the 80s and 90s, kids, there were no female action figures. So I had all the female action figures because they just didn't exist. So I had her. Her name is Mona Lisa, I believe. That was her code name.
Nice.
But because there were just no, like, you had to glomp on to the, like, four female characters there were because there just weren't any.
When I do like a female character, I feel very passionate about that female character, but it can be kind of rare and I can be kind of picky.
Yeah, so. Same.
I want to just bring this back to Hulse just a little bit, just to finish that up, because I genuinely am curious about this character. Like, so, because I'm not, this is a type of fandom I'm not necessarily used to. Like, you know, so you've created this character, and I've seen you post art. You, like, what I've seen on your Twitter feed are just illustrations, you know, like images and stuff like that. Are you telling a story with him? Are you, like, what's the intention with him? And how much of his story have you told? Like, I don't know how his face is messed up like that. Have you told that? Have you figured that out? Are you going to tell that? Like, what?
I will get to reveal. Like, it took me a while to actually figure out why his face was messed up, because sometimes, you know, when I was creating the visual, I was just like, okay, well, he was just horrifically wounded by a monster, period. Yeah. And I didn't really have to think about it. And so that didn't come until much later when I'd thought about it for a really long time and also had lots of people asking me the same question. How did he get so fucked up?
Yeah. I mean, you see him and that's the first thing you kind of wonder.
Yeah. And I eventually did write the backstory and I illustrated it, actually. I really need to stick some of this stuff on my main Twitter instead of just my side Twitter.
Oh, is it on the secret Twitter?
my secret Twitter where I post naughtiness.
Yeah.
Which I will not be sharing here. You have to know me personally. That's the rule.
All right.
Or find me of your own horny Googling.
If you search Witcher porn, I'm sure you'll find it. You know?
Well, Tim, just make it easy for everyone. Why don't you? But anyway, I mostly post about Hulst on my side Twitter. But I, you know, I really, after this, I should really introduce him on my main Twitter.
Yeah.
Because I certainly draw him all the time. And I've done a lot of posts about him on my Instagram as well, which, I mean, I can share on my socials after this.
But I guess what I'm really wondering is, it's like, is there eventually maybe going to be a comic with him, or is that not what he's for? You know, like, I'm curious about what your thoughts are for what you're going to do with this character you've created. Because he is an interesting one.
I'm getting to that. And I will just say, to answer your question, the reason he is fucked up is because when he was very young, fresh out of Witcher school, he had a fight with a griffin that went really wrong. And the griffin picked him up and took him back to feed a nest full of baby griffins. And so he's basically been half eaten by a griffin. Like pulled apart by a lot of beaks and claws. So that is why his face looks like that and why he only has one hand. So yeah, I just, and that was all just in the interest of me wanting to make a really gnarly looking guy.
Yeah.
Because that's just what I'm into, I guess. But the thing is as I did, and the thing that really made me fall in love with him is in the way the rest of the fandom came to interact with him via their own, like, Witcher characters that they'd made. And so instantly he was making friends. Instantly I had a lot of people, like, who wanted to know more. And because of all that engagement, I really started to come up with, like, a much bigger backstory for him. And to the extent that I was just like, I could write a book about this character.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually I did a... I went on a cabin writing retreat with a bunch of my friends this past year, and I banged out like an outline for a graphic novel where he is, I will say he is not necessarily main character material, but I wanted to write a story that featured him heavily. And it is it's an original story. So I've taken him out of Witcherverse for purposes of that. And I just refer to him as the Berserker in this one. But, and like anytime I'm writing something original, I always play to what I call my ironclad kinks. So whatever I'm super into at the time, I will write that and I'll write everything inspired by that. So I was like, okay, we need a main character. I'm like, who do I love that would be a really good main character, very interesting. And I came up with this guy who doesn't have a name yet. I just call him the poet, and he's sort of like it's a little bit like if Yaskier and Tyrion Lannister had a baby. You know, so that's like the main character. And then I have Halst as like sort of like the sort of threatening side character. There's a lot going on, but
okay,
that's cool.
So there is a whole outline for a graphic novel or graphic novel series, or really I would love to do a webcomic. That's all about that I like essentially invented because I wanted to put Halst in a story. So, because I'm incapable of not writing stories. It's just compulsive.
Yeah.
But I definitely spent a week just banging out this outline, and it was really rewarding, and it's not even done. It's just, you know, I feel like you reach a point, you're like, oh, this is where it's supposed to end. But then when you get there, you're like, oh, crap, it's still just the middle.
Oh, that's awesome.
But yeah, I absolutely do have a story that I would like to write with him in it, and a webcomic I would like to do. Or because that's going back to our talk about publishers earlier. I don't want anybody's iron fist of creative control over me. I want to draw my own thing. Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to publish it after the fact, banger. But you know, but you don't get to tell me what to do in the moment. You don't get to tell me this is not an appropriate main character. I'm like, yes, it is, because I say it is.
So if Dark Horse asked if you wanted to draw a Witcher comic, nope, not an official one.
Oh, God, if it was Witcher, if they asked me to draw official Witcher, I couldn't. There's no way I could say no to that, Tim.
I mean, no way. I would love to see you draw official Witcher.
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Yeah.
I would love to see you draw it. Yeah. She'd
be a lot better than some of the official Witcher.
Yeah, now, to be fair, I haven't read the new ones yet. I have to pick it up from my comic shop.
A friend of mine has been, like, just DMing me screenshots or like, just pictures from, like, the one that just came out. And I'm like, I need to get this. This looks so good. And I really like the art too.
That's exciting. I haven't seen a new one. Tim and I did a whole side quest about the graphic novels, and some of them are really good, and some of them not so much.
Well, we did it about the first graphic novel. We'll probably eventually do one about the second kind of omnibus. But yeah, the newest one, I know there is a new one.
I haven't picked it up yet.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, there's like a new, I think, floppy or...
Yeah.
You know what I mean when I say floppy, right?
It's on my pull list.
Single issue.
Yeah.
But the ones that looks really appealing to me, especially like art wise, especially. So it's like, okay, I need to pick that one up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like the one that we talked about, like some of them we really liked and then others not as much, both stories and art, you know, art wise. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it's kind of, and that seems to be the consensus I've heard from most people who've read the comics is, you know, some are better than others, you know? Yeah. So, So yeah, I can't, you know, I want to check out the new one, but I can't imagine you would not be heads and tails above some of the artists we've seen. On
Listen,
the
thing, so. The thing with like the comic franchises is like, I'm never, if you were to find me at the right moment when I'm really super into something, like if somebody came to me, Dark Horse, if you're listening, if you were just like, hey, would you like to draw an original Witcher comic? I would. There's no way I would say no. There's no way. I will just have to do it. Otherwise, it was one of those things like that I'm like, okay, if you say no, will you regret it forever? Yes, you will. I would draw it.
Yeah.
Even despite all my talk, I'd be like, I can't do this full time anymore. But because like for certain things, like when Marvel comes knocking on my door, I actually really do like working for Marvel. And doing the Marvel franchises because I have an attachment to them is very rewarding to me. So
yeah.
Or like I remember briefly, Tim, like we talked, you had me do some test arts for like Dark Crystal.
Oh, I know.
And that didn't work out because the other artist came back. He decided not to quit after all. But like I was really like, oh my god, I love Dark Crystal. So I was just, you know, I'm just drawing Skeksis. And having a grand time.
That would be, God, that would have been really cool. Now I'm bummed that I'd forgotten that I had reached out to you about that.
You did, and I was really excited because that's like one of the franchises I would have been like ultra hyped to.
Well, Boom is still doing, I'm not involved with them anymore, but Boom is still doing Dark Crystal comics. So, and honestly,
I haven't been involved with like Boom or Dark Horse or.
Yeah.
Like I said, Marvel is the one I've been involved with most recently. But like I said, Dark Horse, if you're listening,
we'll just tag all the publishers in there. I wanted to ask you, Joe, before we let you go, because I don't often have the opportunity to talk fandom with people.
Oh, well, hit me up anytime,
like,
girl.
Oh, I'd love to. I just want to talk like, what's your fandom with you? And are there any specific things that you love about the fandom? Or, you know, we talked about LGBTQ representation a little bit. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Because I kind of feel like, personally, ask your canonically bi and stop pussyfooting around it and just like do it already.
I agree.
Oh my God. Please make him bi. Like
it's almost there. We're almost there. Yeah, but not quite.
I feel like there's people already doing it, even if they can't say it. Like, if they're contractually like obligated to be like, no, he's completely straight. I'm like, no, that is a lie. That is not how he's being written. That's not how he's being played.
Right. So. Well, I don't know if you know, like on the timeline, on the official timeline website on Netflix, there was a throwaway line about how he romances, or I don't know if romances is the word they use, but like flirts with kings and queens, or many a king and queen have fallen for his charms.
See, that makes complete sense to me.
But it's like buried.
The way his character has been handled. So
it's buried on like a timeline website. It's not like legitimate on the actual show. Now, there are rumors that for season 3, he's going to be flirting with Radovid. So I don't know.
Really? I've been keeping an eye on that. I'm excited for that.
Who is? I remember we've seen the actor who was cast as Radovid. Was he cute? Was he?
It was fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've seen the actor.
I feel like we did. Valerie and I looked at him, but maybe I'm misremembering. But if he's cute, I'm all for it.
I would also say, in talking to a lot of the people I've met who have cosplayed Yaskier, none of them play him straight either.
Yeah.
No, they're just like, nope, they're all, excuse my French, fruity as fuck. And just absolutely all about it. Like at the Dragon Con meetup, I remember there was a really fantastic, ostentatious, over-the-top Dandelion cosplayer in like full like regalia from the game.
Nice.
And you know, for all the photo ops, he was like, are there any girls who want to just lift me? Like hold me like a princess. And the one that did was this like tiny, very butch lesbian girl. And she's like, yes, I'm gonna do this. And it was amazing. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm feeling God in this Chili's tonight.
Nice. Have you seen Blood Origin yet? We haven't talked about it.
Yes,
on the podcast.
I liked Blood Origin.
Canonical gay couple in Blood Origin, but I feel like The Witcher is on the whole. I'm like, come on, Witcher, let's get a few more people in here.
No, yeah, I think they need more. I also say I appreciate Blood Origin being like, oh yes, look at the predecessor to the Witcher Bard romance. I see that.
Exactly. Called Lark, yeah.
So I enjoyed Blood Origin quite a bit. I liked it way more than I thought I would. And although really the character I'm in love with was that dwarf.
Yes, oh, Meldoff is awesome. Amazing.
Meldoff was she stole the show for me. I was like, Meldoff.
Yeah. I don't want to say too much because we're eventually going to talk about those episodes, but she was totally my favorite.
Even before I saw the show, just like seeing like clips of her or pictures of her, I'm like, I'm ready to be absolutely not normal about this story.
Yeah. Yeah. Preview to like our listeners. Yeah. Expect to hear me and probably Valerie too, because I know Valerie's a fan, like talk about how much we love Meldoff. Joe, if you ever do Meldoff fan art or print or anything like that, I will buy the fuck out of that. If you ever open up commissions, I will probably commission you to draw that. So,
All right. I'll keep that in mind.
She's like,
I will keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Well, easy money from Tim.
I know. We've commissioned so many people.
Yeah. and Joe has an amazing print that I am going to buy. I just have not gotten around to it yet. But I will, because eventually this room that I'm kind of in, which I realize looks like nothing right now, is going to be all, you know, Witcher and fan art, like fan arted out. Yeah. It's going to be my studio.
I spent quite a bit of money commissioning this fantastic painter to do like a portrait of Halst, actually. Then I got it printed out via Google Photos onto like a canvas, and it just arrived today, and I'm so excited. Nice.
Are you gonna post it eventually on your socials?
I probably should post it. It's weird for me to feel like posting another artist's work, which is probably why I've not done that. But I don't know if they ever posted it on their socials. But it's a piece that I really super love.
I think if you commissioned it, like, it's up to you. And, you know, I'm sure they want credit.
I just think that, you know.
It is a little, like, when you're an artist, I can understand.
I always feel like, you know, whenever, I think it's just polite to, when, like, my commissioners ask permission, can I post this?
Yeah.
And I always say yes.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, dude, go ham, you know, especially if I don't plan to post it for, you know, XYZ reasons. But
that's interesting, because I would always feel like I recently commissioned another artist friend of ours, you know, who we've mentioned on the podcast before, Maya, for some art, not actually Witcher art, but like she actually asked, can I post it to me? You know, like, I think she just assumed.
I asked that as well of people who, well, I always want to make sure they've seen it before I post it publicly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always say, sense. I don't say, can I post this? I go, when can I post this?
Mm.
You know, sort of, because I want them to be able to have like a say. I want to make sure that the person who bought it sees it first. That's like my big rule.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think we're probably wrapping up soon, but before we go, Joe, I just want to ask you, because like I said, I have a fandom person. Yes.
Yes.
So do you have anything fandom you want to talk about that we didn't touch on? Like maybe season 3? Do you have any things you'd like to see in the upcoming season?
Things I'd like to see. I would really like, you know, just an epic kissing scene between Geralt and Yaskir. Just so much tongue. That's, you know.
You know, here's a question for you. What do you think of Yaskir Yennefer? Because I was all aboard the ship SSS Gearskir.
Are we talking about Yenskir
and
now?
Yeah. And then season 2, Yenskir came along and I was like, what is this?
I will
go on a leisurely harbor cruise aboard this ship.
Oh my God, no. I was not aboard that ship until... And I hear that The actors begged for a scene together.
Yes, they did.
And when they got it, I was like, okay, you need to do every scene with these two.
Yeah.
They're so interesting.
That's interesting context. I didn't know that.
No, they told Lauren, they're like, can we be in some scenes together? And she was like, sure.
No wonder they have such chemistry. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're friends and they like each other and wanted to be in scenes together, that makes a lot of sense. I had no idea. Oh, wow.
And okay. Like, and it ended up being, I think, some of the best scenes, even of yeah. character-driven scenes of season two. I was like, yeah. Oh, you guys killed it. You know, I was like, so good. I want so much more of that. Like, I love Jenskier. I love that. I kind of ship everything.
Yeah. I do too. I love the fact that they're like, fuck you, girl. We're going to go off and do our own thing. Be with people that are emotionally available.
Yeah, seriously. I'm like, the conversation they have about, like, we're better off without him. I'm like, oh my God, the exes are just having a little convo here. So cute.
And the fact that they're very similar people, you know, they have similar vibes. They're both very catty. They're both very smart. They're both very, like,
oh, yeah,
type
no,
A,
I always,
go for what they want.
I always
like,
joke
I like
that Geralt has a type.
Yeah.
And it's these bitches.
Yeah. Head bitch in charge.
Mm-hmm. He loves to be bullied. He always, like, chooses partners who want to bully him. So.
Oh, yeah, he's a sub.
He's a sub.
This is what happens when I have fan friends on the podcast. Anyway.
Have a lot more. You should have a lot more.
Oh, yeah. I'm working on it. But yeah, it's been fun. Like, I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to talk about? Any other Witcher thoughts or art thoughts? Or
oh, my God. I mean, as soon as anybody asks me that question, every thought in my head I've ever had is gone. But, you know.
Like blue screen.
Where it's just, dial up modem sound. So, I mean, I guarantee that my brain is full of junk all the time, but I think that we've really covered a lot of the main.
Well, where can people find you if they want to check out your art?
Yeah.
They can find me at Joanna Estep on Twitter. And I think, and Joanna_Estep_draws on Instagram. And that's
oh, the
I
joy
am.
Of having the different Instagram and Twitter handle. Oh, we know well.
I couldn't get the same one. Or no. I don't even remember why they're different.
There's like character limits and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, it's just something I had to do at the time. But do I like that they're different? Not really. But
and we'll
it
make,
is what it is.
And we'll make sure we link to those as well as your site. What was the site you mentioned earlier where people can get your webcomic? We got to get those last 20 copies like sold.
I really liked it. It was a really interesting read. Like, I remember I messaged you and I was like, this is my interpretation of what happened.
Yeah because especially the first story is you know, there's room for interpretation there, mm-hmm. as for what that is. I don't know the explicit story, but
well, if you buy if you buy the comic, it has my author's notes in it about mm-hmm. what inspired it and kind of like what I was going for. But mm-hmm. I do find that every interpretation that I've heard is extremely valid. I was like, if that is what you see in it, that is what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm just glad that like a lot of people are seeing what they want to. And I think
the
that's
the second story, Tim, the interpretation is they fuck.
That no, Joseph said correct. My interpretation is valid, you know. So if I think it's a story about, you know, like you know, bonding over, you know, like friendship and high tea and I don't
oh,
know
they,
like,
they bond like Tim they bond
like the you know, coming together of disparate, like, you know, perspectives
they
and
come together.
Okay, actually, we joke, but like, you know, despite all my sexy times I drew in the second story, it ended up being all about just making, you know, Geralt smile like nobody was watching him. Like, he had all his defenses down, all his walls down, and was just sort of like, you know, had a moment of like actual real happiness. And that's what that second story became about, because, you know, I love to torture him. He's just he's so beautiful when he's sad. So, so I was like, okay, I hurt you with the first story. I'm going to heal you with this one.
It's a really fun, you know, I have it. I have a copy of it and I really liked it. It's a really great fan comic. So if you guys are interested in Witcher fan comics, you should totally check it out.
Apparently, like, Geralt, like, smiles and, you know.
He has a reason to smile.
Sean, Geralt, or Jaskier totally fucks. Geralt, apparently.
So I was going to say, we've known the theme for a while now, and that is that Yaskier fucks.
Oh, yeah, that's canon. Yaskier fucks.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's what I absolutely want to see at season 3. I want to see Yaskier be in any kind of, like, romance. I don't care who it's with. I just want to see fulfillment of the fact that he is allegedly the continent's biggest man whore. I really just want... I because it's all, it's been all tell and no show.
Okay.
I want some show.
All right.
100%.
Yeah. All right, Joe, did you find your website again so you could tell it one last time? And,
oh, sorry. And yes, it's... yeah, it's joannaestep.storenv.com. And I probably... I don't know if I... should spell that out for anybody who's not familiar with Store Envy, but
we will put it in the episode notes.
Okay.
And we'll link to it also on our Twitter and our Instagram and Discord. Yeah. So also, yeah, Joe is she hasn't been there lately, but she is a member of our Discord, so you can maybe actually say hi to her there if you
Joe's problem is she manages her own Witcher Discord as well.
Oh,
so she's busy with that one a lot. I have to go I have to go do some modding right after we're done.
Send
here.
Me a link, Joe.
All right. If you want to descend into like original character Witcher hell, then I will totally help you out.
So all right. Well, I think that'll do it. I have a little tiny little bit of whiskey left. I don't know if anyone else has anything.
A little
in their
tiny,
glass.
Tiny so, baby. All right. Bit.
So I'm going to do a virtual toast for everyone who has things to Joe and Joanna Eastep and her Witcher fandom, her Witcher art, her career. Thank you for coming on our podcast.
Thank you, Joe.
We wish you the best.
Thank you
success
for having me.
Going forward. So, so cheers, everyone.
Cheers to Dark Horse hiring me to draw official Witcher stuff. No,
hey, we'll bug them.
No, you guys are great. Thank you so much for having me on here. I love the podcast.
Thank you.
I definitely listen to it while I'm drawing Witcher stuff.
Oh.
Or, you know, just working to pass the time because, I don't know. I just like hearing your lovely voices.
Our lovely slurred voices. Valerie yelling at me for
I'm okay.
Well, thanks for joining us, Joe. It's been awesome.
Thank you, Joe.
Oh, of course. Thank you guys.
Whiskey with Witcher is a Malcontent Media production by Tim Beadle and Valerie Petrarca. Our producer is Sean Farina. For updates, pics, and behind-the-scenes shenanigans, follow us on Twitter at WhiskeyWitcher and on Instagram at WhiskeyWithWitcher. Want to express your undying love for Roach or recommend a good whiskey? Email us at WhiskeyWithWitcher@malcontent.media. Who knows, we might even get drunk enough to read your email in a future podcast. If you like what you've heard, toss us a proverbial coin by rating and reviewing the show on Apple Podcasts and subscribing wherever podcasts are downloaded. Cheers!
All right, to make it a little easier for me to sync this, on the count of three, we are all going to clap.
Okay.
Ready? One, two, three. More on three this time.
Joe, I was going through your website and I saw all your Loki stuff and I was like, yeah. How's it going?
I have absolutely been a giant whore for Loki in the past and still am. Love the TV series. I'm big Loki's shipper.
Your fandoms that I've known about throughout since I've known you have been really sort of unique and to me kind of endearing because they're like they're not the sort of fandoms that most people, like, I guess Witcher is an exception, but, like, you mentioned Leonard Nimoy, and I remember, like, you were such a big fan, but, like, the one I remember at one point you did, like, Carl Sagan fan art. I've never known anyone in my life who has done that sort of fan art.
I had a phase where I was super in love with Carl Sagan.
Yeah, and I remember, and I just thought that was so sweet and kind of, like, super geeky, but, like...
That's something that my friends say about me is that I actually take it as a point of pride, but they're always like, we can never, never predict the stuff you're going to be into. Like, we fail every time. There's no way to tell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. It's kind of true. There's no way to tell. It's like just I flip from branch to branch.
Yeah.